Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is actually Saturday, August 19th, 2006, and this is show number 56. I'm coming to you on Saturday because I have a special show. We'll still have a show on Sunday, but Friday I had the great pleasure to be interviewed on a wonderful podcast called Views from the Coop. Now, this is more strictly a Windows podcast, but Paige and Christy decided that they wanted to talk to a Macintosh person and see what's it like. What do you use it for? Why are you on a Mac anyway? It was kind of funny to be on this podcast because they treated me like this specimen that they'd never talked to one of us before. So that was a lot of fun. I have to give a couple of warnings here. For the more metropolitan of you, you'll find that this is a good old country flair to this show. And the other thing is, since I'm speaking to people from the South, I sound like I'm going really, really fast. In fact, I think I actually was. And that kind of brings up a couple of things. I've had a lot of people who tell me that I speak too quickly and that I need to slow down. But I've also had people tell me that I sound a little stiff because my show is scripted. However, if you listen to the shows where I'm scripted, I take my time, I explain things slowly and clearly, and when I'm talking off the top of my head, man, is it fast. It made me tired listening to how fast it is. But anyway, I'd really like you to give a listen to this podcast, and also head on over to twosmartchicks.com. That's the number two, smartchix.com. /blog, and the blog has a capital B. I'll have a link in the show notes for you so you can find it, but that's where you can start picking up Views from the Coop. So, enough said, let's listen to the show.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air after locking up the barn with the greatest of care. Then down in the hen house, somebody stirred when he shouted, "Who's there? Who's there?" I'm telling the truth, this is what he heard. You can believe it or not. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself, stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Christy Chicky Two Hicks with Paige Chicky Chicky Isinger, and we are here with Views from the Coop. And today we have a special guest coming to visit us, and I'm very excited about meeting with her and hearing about what she does because it's exactly what I'm hoping to do in the next few months. Paige, can you introduce Allison to us?
At this point, Allison doesn't need a whole lot of introduction because we've been talking about her now for weeks, but I'm going to give her a really good one anyway. Allison Sheridan is a super duper Mac techie chick, and I just think that is so cool because I've never known a Mac techie chick before. I met Allison as part of the tech podcast group that Christy and I are both members of, and we just kind of got into a conversation about her podcast and my podcast, and one thing led to another, and hey, Allison agreed to come on the show. Hey, Allison, we're glad you're here.
Well, thanks, guys, for having me on. This is a thrill for me, too.
Well, before we get started, and I'm sure we all have all kinds of questions to ask you, we always start out with an announcement or two, and I only have one this morning, Christy, and I just wanted to remind all of you Firefox users out there that Firefox 2.0 beta should be released August 23rd. At least that's what we're hearing. The full-fledged Firefox 2.0 has been pushed back till October because they've got a few more bugs that they're working out. But if you're like me and you're like Christy and you're really a Firefox fan, you might want to check that beta out when it comes out on August 23rd. And also, you'll notice that I have a link on our outline page today underneath announcements. You know, I told you last week that Fritz had sent me some pictures of his Pro Twister. Well, you can take a look now at Fritz and his Pro Twister because I have a link on here. And for those of you who will be looking at this after the show, you can see Fritz too just by clicking on the link underneath announcements on our outline page. So, Allison, did you have to get up early today?
Yeah, you woke me up there, Paige. Luckily, you remembered to give me my wake-up call, but I'm doing good now.
Well, you're sounding good as always. Allison, I have to ask you this. It's just like a burning, burning question. How on earth did you ever become a techie computer geek chick?
Well, it was actually pretty easy to fall into it. I'm a mechanical engineer, actually, and so, you know, the whole science thing was obvious. And then I went into working in computers at work, and I think what really tilted the scale towards doing this so intensely was when I got my first laptop. I got the Apple Titanium when it first came out. And I mean, when it first came out, I like to be the first one to have the cool new gadget. And as soon as it became portable, that's when it started to be with me all the time. That's when it became a lifestyle.
Okay, you're talking Macs here, right? So that's how you got started. Whatever made you decide to start with Mac, which I'm assuming you did, rather than starting with a PC?
Well, it's kind of like most people, it's actually what I started with. I got my first Mac in 1984, so it wasn't the very first Mac, it was the second Mac that ever came out, the 512K Mac, that's 512 kilobytes of RAM. And I stayed with that, and that's what we used at work. As the work environment switched over to PCs, I just never went. So what's kind of fun about the work I've been doing with Windows is that I am a 48-year-old neophyte when it comes to Windows. I literally don't know how to do anything, so it's been really fun to learn.
Well, you know, Allison, it's funny you say that because, you know, a lot of us, at least people, I hate to say this, I don't want to make it sound wrong, but people in my age group grew up using Macs in school. And then we moved on to PCs, and now it's just common. That's what you use. You use a PC. I have interest in learning how to use a Mac because of the uniqueness of it, because it's so different. I actually used to sell them when I was in college. Paige wants me to tell you my age group. I'm in my mid-30s. So thanks, Paige, for bringing that up. Anyway, my concern with going strictly to a Mac is being able to use some of the programs. I'm a home business owner, and being able to use the programs that are written for that wouldn't be compatible with a Mac, I've always been leery of making that change. I think I'm excited about listening to you tell us about how to get past that, Allison.
That's probably one of the coolest things that's happened in technology to me in the last 6 months. So let me introduce an interesting idea. There's a thing called a virtual machine, and this has been around for a long time in other operating systems, but the idea is that you have a host operating system on your computer, like Windows, and then you can have a guest operating system that runs in parallel with that first operating system. You need a pretty powerful machine. It's got to be able to, you know, you got to have enough RAM to add to two operating systems instead of one. The day after Apple's Boot Camp came out, a company called Parallels came out with a product that gives you virtual machine on a Macintosh where you can run a second operating system. You can actually run three operating systems at the same time. I've never pushed it to try to run four at the same time, but that would be the limit. But the cool thing about Parallels for this community is that you can run the Mac operating system as your host operating system, and then you can run Windows. And it doesn't even have to be XP. You can run XP, either service pack. You can run Windows 98, Windows ME. You can run Windows 3.1. You can run DOS if you want to. You can also run Linux. You can run all different variants of Linux. It's got everything in there. In fact, you can run Sun's Solaris operating system, which none of your audience would have heard of. But anyway, what you can do doing that now is dependent on the fact that Apple went to the Intel processor. So now what we have is basically a kick butt PC that happens to be running the Mac operating system. So you put Windows on top of it in Parallels. A lot of people say, well, wait a minute, isn't that just like virtual PC? And it is, but when it's running under Parallels, it's not running in an emulation mode, which is why virtual PC was so slow. Was it was emulating the calls, like Windows wanted to be talking to an Intel processor, but it was sitting on a computer that didn't have an Intel processor, so it had to emulate the calls over to the PowerPC processor. Well, now it really is an Intel processor, so Windows screams under Parallels on the Mac. I could go on for another 40 minutes straight on that, so I want to take a pause and see if I've generated questions yet.
Oh, I have one. I think it's just super cool that you can do this, that you can actually make use of more than one operating system at a time, but why would I want to do that? Who would want to do that?
Well, most people, and this is maybe not this community because this is a high-tech community, but most people use their computer to browse the web and read email. Maybe play with their photos, you know, do a little video, something like that. You know, the higher-end people might do video. A Macintosh is absolutely out-of-the-box spectacular for that. Does everything that a PC can do there. Does the Mac side, does it really, really well because they've integrated all of the tools for the home user for, they call it the digital environment. So when you get a Mac, you get a whole bunch of tools all built into one that you don't ever have to buy, and they're high-end. So you've got a photo application called iPhoto. You've got a movie creation application called iMovie. You've got a DVD burning application called iDVD, and that actually allows you to create scene selections and add music and throw little pictures in, all that kind of stuff. That's built in. And then it's got GarageBand built in, which is a pretty sophisticated music creation program. You can edit music that you've got if you want to clip it to put it into your movie. You can actually create music. You could do, I think it's 8 tracks, something like that. So it's like a high-quality mixer thing. So all this stuff you get together, you get on the Mac. But now, there's times I've got some applications, just like Christy said, that only run on the PC. So at work, I was having to do all these weird things to get to a PC. But now, if we use an application called Lotus Notes Same Time, it's just like it's a chat client and it's a meeting room sort of thing. But it only runs under Windows right now. There is a beta for the Mac, but it doesn't work very well. So I can just flip back and forth between the two. And when I don't want to care about, let's say the big virus word here. There are, as of right now, there has never been a valid virus in the Macintosh environment in the 5 years that the operating system been out. Not one. The last virus we had was actually a Microsoft-based virus on Microsoft Word. So imagine a world where you can click on any link you want. You can open any attachment you want. You don't think about security. I mean, we don't run virus software. We don't run. There's no adware. you can literally just be run free through the internet. It's just a marvelous thing. So if you're able to do anything you want, then why not do that? And then save Windows for when you have to use it. I see some questions popping.
That reminds me so much of those commercials Apple had out last spring where, you know, the computer guy kept getting a virus and he'd crash because of it. And I have to say, that's one of the greatest marketing campaigns because it interested me in a Mac again. And then I started doing some research and I like the computers. I like the way they look. I just, the ease of use for my kids, even though they've become tech chicks of their own right, you know, I've got 2 6-year-olds and a 9-year-old, and they can run a computer just as well as their dad can. But it's, you know, one of those things where just the ease of use appeals to me.
Yeah, ease of use is a big factor on the Macs. I have a younger sister. Well, she's in her late 60s now, out in Simi Valley, California, who sort of grew up on Macs, and she made a very good living for many years creating computer graphics using a Mac. She started with a Mac when they had a menu system that was far superior to Windows and a very stable platform to work with. And so she's a person that wouldn't think of using a Windows PC unless the Mac didn't have a program to do what she wanted it to do.
I remember that commercial about the PC and the Mac and about the PC getting the viruses all the time, and I was just curious what the difference is between the two as to why the PC would get more viruses than the Mac.
Let's see, let me back up and say one other thing about what makes a Mac cool and then flip forward to that question, because that's a really, really important question and there's a lot of different answers to it. Beyond the operating system and how slickly it works and how good they look, the ease of use is built not just into the software, but also into the hardware. If you're ever using a Mac and you can't figure out how to do something and you're getting real frustrated, you have to sit back and think, if I were designing it, how would it work? And 99% of the time, that's the way it works. My husband and I wanted to put in a second disk drive into his G4. So we popped the case open. By the way you pop the case open on a G4 is there's a little circular handle and you pull out on it and the door flips open and all the components are instantly available, no screws, no nothing to deal with. So we get in there and we're looking at the little drive bay and we're thinking, okay, we just need to pop a drive in there, but we got to get the carrier out, right? And we're looking at it and the darn screw is caught down like behind a thing. You're going to have a screwdriver that's got a 90 degree bend in it, and we're cutting our knuckles and swearing. And I'm thinking of the time my dad told me on Lincoln Continental he had to pull a wheel to change a spark plug. And my husband says, wait a minute, this is a Mac. How should it work? So we sat back and we just looked at it and he said, well, if I were going to do it, I'd have a screw that I could get to. And I look straight down, and there's a ribbon cable, and I lift that little ribbon cable, and there's the single screw we have to pull out to pull the carrier out. So if it's too hard, you're doing it wrong. You know, you start over and just go, okay, if it were easy, what would it work like? Now on to Fritz's good question about the viruses. There's a bunch of different things. Definitely a big feature of this is, if you want to make a really big splash, you're going to, in the virus world, you're going to attack something big where it's a huge deal. I mean, the guys that did the Zotab virus are, you know, legends and that sort of thing, in their own mind at least. But if you want to, so attacking a small market, you know, 5-7% of the community, then that's not going to be as exciting. It certainly would be a big feather in somebody's cap to say, I came up with the first Mac virus, though. So I'm not sure that's a big component of it, because a lot of people want to wipe that smarmy look off our faces, right? But the second thing is, on a Mac, you have to give the root password, the administrator password, in order to install an application. Period. There are no exceptions. So nothing can get installed in the background like it can on a PC. And that simple fact is huge. You know, a lot of people were yapping about 6 months ago, everybody said there was a Trojan horse for the Mac, and it came through iChat, which is our way of talking to AOL Instant Messenger. But if you read if you actually looked into what you had to do to get to the virus, first of all, you had to get this message from somebody. You had to click on it. So you had to click on this link. You had to agree to download. You had to type in your administrator password in order to get that. Well, the definition of a virus is that it's self-propagating, that once I get it, I automatically give it to everybody in my address book or something like that. Well, if I have to agree to download and put in my administrator password, I'm not thinking that virus is going to get real far. So that's the other huge piece of it, is built into the Unix operating system is a level of security that simply doesn't exist on the Windows side yet. We're hoping that Vista's going to have it, though.
Well, that answered that about that. But the only thing I can't figure out is why Windows on the PC is so stupid that they don't take and do that. I mean, for as long as they've been around, it would solve a lot, at least seems to me, a lot of their security problems.
Yeah, it would. I think the problem that Microsoft is having is they're actually suffering from their own success. If Steve Jobs wants to change something on the Mac, he's a little more bold. He rips the Band-Aid off. I mean, one day he just decided there weren't floppy drives anymore. And everybody went, oh my God, what are we going to do with the floppy drives? And he just said, no, we're just not doing it anymore. And then one day he said, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. He just rips the Band-Aid off. He said, not going to support OS 9 anymore. We're done. We're going to OS 10. OS 9 is over. Well, what Microsoft has done with, you know, 180 billion customers, imagine if they suddenly tomorrow instituted something that forced everybody to put an administrator password in. You'd have 95% of the country or the world not knowing how to do anything on their computer. They've just got such a cumbersome, you know, it's moving an iceberg. They've just got too many customers to be able to make rapid, agile changes. So I think that's why they haven't been able to get to it. But Apple has, I mean, definitely, they flip the switch and everybody goes into a big fit. They're a big furor, you know. Oh my God, we don't have SCSI drives anymore. What will we do? You know, because he said, we're going to ATA now. And, you know, everybody seems to survive.
This is just so interesting. I've never really talked to somebody that really knew what they were talking about when it came to a Macintosh. And it looks like, hey, Christy, we picked out the right person this week. Allison, you said something earlier in this that I'm going to have to follow up on just because I really want to hear about this. You said that here you are, a 48-year-old Windows neophyte, that you started using Windows and you didn't have a clue what to do. Why don't you fill us in a little bit on your first experience?
Ooh, you make it sound so sexy. Let's see. One of the reasons Paige and I hit it off, I think, is because I don't find a lot of value in bashing Windows. I mean, what's the point in that? I mean, some Mac people would say it's such an easy target that's cheap to bash it, but I wouldn't. What I'm finding really interesting about going into Windows, first of all, I think that Windows might be single-handedly responsible for carpal tunnel syndrome. I cannot believe how many times you people have to say, yes, I want to put it in the trash. That's why I told you I wanted to put it in the trash. It's hysterical how often you have to do that. So there's a lot of little inefficiencies that kind of drive me nuts. But when you really dig down into it, a computer is a computer, an operating system is an operating system. Things are really the same. I had a Windows guy that I work with who was paralyzed when I told him I wanted him to help me with the network connection I was making. And he was just like, he threw his hands up and goes, oh my God, I don't know how to do a Mac. And I said, look, it's just a control panel. You click on things like connection settings. It's called something slightly different on the Mac side, but you end up going to the exact same kind of stuff. You put in DHCP things. You put in proxy servers. You know, it's all the same, just slightly worded differently. I do think you end up going a lot less deep in commands. I think it's two clicks to get to a network setting, where I think it's like five or six to get to it on the PC. But what is absolutely positively true is, even to this day, I believe that Windows launches applications quicker and can make transitions between slides and PowerPoint and things like that faster. So I see there's a bunch of questions stacking up, but I want to get, there's a real interesting subtlety here. So when Apple went to the Intel processor, not all of the applications were instantly written for Intel. So they use an emulation layer called Rosetta, which is really, really good. I mean, applications run as fast on my Intel-based Mac as they did on my G4, but they don't scream, right? They're not really, really fast on the Intel-based processor yet because they're not what they call a universal binary. When an application's a universal binary, that means that it runs super fast on Intel and super fast on the PowerPC. It can run on both. So if you take an application like Microsoft Office on my Intel-based Mac, when I'm running it under the Mac side, the OS X side, it's actually way slower than if I run it under Windows. So during this transition period, I'm actually finding myself launching Windows and running my applications over there that are native over there. So again, I get the best of both worlds. We used to fight and argue, and you know, the OS wars, oh my God, who's going to win? Well, obviously Microsoft won, but I think now the OS wars are actually over and we won. We can run both. We don't have to pick and choose. We can run them both at the same time. And that's what I think of running Windows.
Man, my husband's going to be so sorry I listened to this today, because now I'm going to want to go out and buy a Mac. Paige, it sounds a lot like, you know, we've had quite a few discussions on here about Firefox and Internet Explorer, and the differences between them are just a preference in the interface and the fact that they both work and the fact that some people just prefer one over the other. I think we've also had a discussion about the programming, just small programming differences when you're creating a web page for one or the other, and how one will work better in the other. You just use the one that works better for the application you're using, and the problem's solved. I love that concept, being able to have the best of both worlds. Allison, my husband's probably going to hunt you down.
I love it. No, he's probably going to want to steal it. You know, one of the things to keep in mind when you buy a Mac is that let me give downsides and upsides back and forth for you. If you start to switch, if you have applications that only run under Windows, you're okay now because you can run them on Windows on the Mac. If you want to run them on the Mac side, if they're big paid for applications, you're going to have to buy them again on the Windows on the Mac side. So that's kind of a drag. Since you can run Windows on it, then maybe you don't have to buy them. So that's kind of an advantage we didn't used to have. But the other big thing to keep in mind is that to run Windows on the Mac, you have to actually own a copy of Windows. So when you buy a Windows PC, you buy it from Dell or HP or wherever, CompUSA, it comes with what they call an OEM license, an original equipment manufacturer license of Windows, which means you're only paying, like, the price that's buried in the cost of your machine is only like $70 or $100, something like that. When you buy a Mac, you can't get an OEM license for that. You have to buy Windows to go with it. So if you wanted Windows XP Pro, it's $300. There is a little trick going on, and I'm not quite sure why this is true, but if you buy the MacBook laptop, which is a spectacular machine I would recommend to anyone, if you buy it through Mac Mall, which is the flip side of PC Mall, they actually will include Windows for a significantly reduced price.
Okay, this is my question. Everything that we've talked about and everything that we've discussed leads up to this question. Does this mean that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs are going to, like, kiss and make up?
I don't know if it's going to go that far, but in a strange way, this is not a downside for Bill Gates because he just sold me a copy of Windows for $300. So how is it he lost? He didn't lose anything. Dell lost. HP lost. You know, all the PC hardware vendors lost. They don't actually hate each other. I think, you know, from Bill Gates' standpoint, you know, Steve is just a little entertainment to him. Remember, Microsoft has maintained a unit within Microsoft called the Macintosh Business Unit, the Mac BU. And these guys write Microsoft Office for the Mac. They've committed to another 5 years to continue to do that. At first, they had to contractually do it because of all the lawsuits and everything. But they're continuing for another 5 years to produce the products, and they have just announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple that they will be coming out with a universal binary version of Office, which will be a great relief for me.
Well, I've known for many, many years that the Apple systems were superior to the PC for many functions. However, I have grown up with the Windows operating system, and I'm in that category that I would have to have a really good reason to switch to a Mac at this point in time, knowing that my Windows operating systems would operate on it. And there's the problem I see, that with Apple's sales marketing is that there just doesn't seem to be enough reasons out there for people to make that switch.
You know, Fritz, I see that, but on the other hand, if you're looking for a new computer, it just, I guess for me, it's the uniqueness of being able to have the best of both worlds, not just the, do I really want to go to the trouble? Of course I want to go to the trouble. That's what I'm all about. So, you know, for someone like me, it's almost a no-brainer, where I can see that some people aren't going to want to make the change. Now, I was just on, I am a techaholic page, you're right. In fact, I'm looking for a 12-step program. So I was just on Mac Mall because Allison sent me there, and I'm in trouble.
You know, Fritz, I think one of the things that's really important to keep in mind is exactly what you said, which is it's not for everybody. It's not necessary for you to go do it. The compelling reason I might look at for you is if you're going to go to Windows Vista, that means you're going to go to this dramatically different operating system where you're going to have to learn everything new. It's going to be all different. Well, why not go to the Mac, which out of the box is already extremely stable? I mean, it's a five-year, it's been five revisions in 5 years that have come out. You know, it's stable. It's got all the applications running and all that. That's one place I would look. The other thing is, how much time do you spend keeping your system safe? I mean, you sound like a brilliant man, so I'm sure you run a virus protection software. I assume you spent you're running adware and, you know, spyware applications and all that, and you're probably really good at it, and you keep your system clean, and you have a rigor to your program of how often do you do your updates. What if you didn't have to spend any of that time at all? I mean, would that be kind of fun?
Allison, that's a great point too, and we're going to have trouble with Fritz in here now because you called him what I think it was brilliant. However, I do have a question for you. I love my Trio. I live for my Trio. Am I going to be able to use my Trio with any of the software on the Mac side, or am I still going to have to run it on the Windows side?
Yeah, I have somebody standing next to me now that would argue with you about me being brilliant. But, okay, we'll consider that because we're thinking of buying another computer when Vista comes out next year.
Yeah, that would be a good time to look at it. God, my brain is so small. I already forgot what Christy asked. I'm serious. I can't remember the question.
I asked you about my Trio.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes, you can absolutely use your Trio. Strangely enough, Palm Desktop runs on the Mac, but you can also use a thing, a company called Markspace has a thing called the Sync. And you can sync your Trio to the Mac, and what it does is it syncs your address book out of the Trio into, I'm assuming when you say Trio, you have the Palm version, and it syncs it into your address book. Then your address book is exactly what's available within Apple's Mail utility, so it's all synchronized, you know, it's all integrated into there, and your calendar goes into what's called iCal, and iCal you can publish on the web, you can do all kinds of cute things, and iCal follows the standards that the Microsoft, what is it? I forget what the calendaring program is on Microsoft, but it's the same one as in there, it's very cross-platform, you can trade appointments and things like that. So yes, the Trio works really well.
I can hear it now. Kevin is in serious, serious trouble. Anyway, this discussion could go on for like hours and hours on end, but I want to ask Allison something on a different subject, and that is, we've talked about this before, and that is that Allison has her own podcast, NoZillaCast. Allison, how'd you get started with that?
Well, we have to blame Leo Laporte for a lot of this. I was listening to Leo. I don't know if you guys have heard of Leo, but Leo is a pretty well-known tech radio show guy, and he has a show on the air on AM radio here in Los Angeles. And he started talking about this podcasting thing, so I started checking it out, and I started listening to a bunch of podcasts. And I started thinking, you know, I spend a lot of time boring my friends with, hey, you know, you got to check out this cool new utility I found. Look what it does. Or have you seen this website? This is really fun. You need to play with this. And I thought, well, why don't I bother people who actually want to listen to me and who will listen by choice instead of just annoying the friends in my neighborhood? So I kind of got into it with that. If you read the About Me, you see that my brother Kelly passed away a little over a year ago, and he believed in me. He believed that I could do anything, and he was also one of these guys that had no idea what he couldn't accomplish. He just did things that I'd think, what made you think you could do that? So when I was looking at this and I was getting scared and thinking, oh, I can't do that. You know, that's too hard. I'm not good enough to pull this off. I thought, man, if Kelly were here, he would have looked at me and said, of course you can do that. You should totally do this. So I jumped in with both feet and gave it a shot. The one of the things that happens frequently with podcasters is they have a thing they call pod fade, and that's where you get all excited and you're charged up and you do four shows in a row and then it just disappears. Or some people go a long time before they fade. And I actually faded after four shows. I didn't do anything for about a month, but then I got an email from a listener who said, dude, where's your show? And that's all it took. As soon as I realized that people were actually listening, that's when I just couldn't seem to stop.
Isn't that dudette? I'm glad you didn't stop, because I absolutely love your podcast. Now, my next question, as far as your podcast goes, it's called NoZillaCast. That's a really weird name, Allison, and it's hosted by Podfeet. That's really weird, too. Where'd you come up with those?
Well, actually, it's a combination of my brother Kelly, and this is going to sound like the grief show here, but the same year my friend Eric passed away. Both Kelly and Eric called me funny names, and Kelly used to call me every single name in the book. From when I was real little, he called me Agnes, Agnut, Agnutty, all these different names. And Eric decided one day that he was going to write a screenplay about Nocilla, which is Allison spelled backwards. And so he wrote this whole hilarious email about how Nocilla was a creature in a Japanese horror film, and he had who he was going to cast as the lead and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, it's just kind of a silly thing, and it's a tribute to both of them. You can read the whole thing under the About Allison section if you really feel the need.
Oh, I feel the need coming on. Allison, this has been really a lot of fun, and we're going to have to do this again. We just cannot continue to do it today. We're glad you're here today, and like I said, we're going to do this again. And our website of the week, in case any of you haven't figured it out, is podfeet.com, home of the Nozilla Cast. I have a tip, and I think Christy probably has one too. We've talked a lot about digital photos in the past, and my big challenge with any type of photos is I don't know how the heck how to take them. I mean, they never turn out looking the way I want them to look. And I found some great tips from Kodak. Kodak's been in the camera business for a gazillion years. It's Kodak's top 10 tips for taking great digital photos. And it's just 10 very simple things that you can do to make sure that your digital photos or any of your photos turn out really well. And the nice thing about this particular tip, or these particular 10 tips, is for each tip on the Kodak website, you actually have a here, try it yourself. And you have a virtual subject, and you can move the subject around in the picture. You can take the picture, and it'll come back, and it'll tell you that you did a good job, or here, try again. So you actually get to try to take a picture using each of these 10 tips. And that's on Kodak's website. It's a very long URL, so I won't repeat it here. But when you check out this outline, which will be a link on our blog after this show, you'll be able to go to Kodak's top 10 tips for taking great photos, and you can try that yourself. But before we do leave, I know Christy's just chomping at the bit here to say something, and I'm going to let her say it, and then we're going to let Allison have her last wise words for us. Christy, what's up?
I'm just thinking we absolutely have to have Allison back. If we don't, I just don't know how I'm going to tolerate it. I think we should wait until I buy my new Mac, because I'm sure once I do that, I'll have lots of questions for her. I don't think it'll be by next week. I know Paige has... I get to pick next week's show, and honestly, I haven't done it yet, so I think it'll be a surprise. You'll have to check in on our blog later this week, and we'll be able to tell you what that topic's going to be. If you want to hear about something in particular, send us an email at views@twosmartchicks.com. Otherwise, Allison, it's been great having you on here, and I can't wait to talk to you more about this.
But I don't want to stop talking. I like to talk about this stuff. Well, if you insist, one thing, anybody who wants to talk to me, Christy, if you're that close to doing this, definitely contact me through my email at allison@podfeet.com, and I'll give you some buying advice if you give me some idea of what kind of system you're looking for, if it's a laptop or a tower, or if you've got money constraints. There's all three ends of the spectrum there, all three ends. Anyway, I would love to give advice on this, and if when you get it, you got any questions, nothing makes me happier than getting an email from somebody saying, hey, how do I, even if I don't know the answer, I'll go out and dig it up for you. So that's a great pleasure to me to feel like I can help somebody. So I've really, really enjoyed this, and I feel like we just started to scrape the surface, love to talk to you more sometime. I'll come back. I can come every other Friday I have off, so I can actually support this time.
That is so cool. Allison, you can definitely consider yourself our newest member of the Coop Crew. We are thrilled to death that you came here, and after talking to you so many times prior to this show, I knew it was going to be this much fun. We're glad you're here. We're glad you're going to come back, and Christy's probably going to start drowning your email box with like a gazillion questions, and I'm going to be right behind her. But like Christy said, we do not know what we're going to do next week. But we're great at surprises. So stay tuned. I'll be sending the newsletter out to all of you who subscribe to the newsletter. If you don't subscribe to the newsletter and you'd like to know what we're doing on a weekly basis, all you have to do is drop us an email at views@twosmartchicks.com, and we'll add your email address to our newsletter so you can keep up with us. So once again, thanks everybody. Thanks for all the questions. Allison, it's been wonderful. We look forward to having you back again. You can come and hang with us anytime you want. This has been Paige Chicky Chicky Isinger and Christy Chicky Two Hicks with special guest Allison Sheridan. Thanks again for joining us today on Views from the Coop. See you later.
There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Now quiet yourself. Stop that fuss, cause there ain't nobody here but us. And kind of point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble up and hit the hay.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Views from the Coop. Like I said, head on over to Views from the Coop and listen to their podcast anytime. And we'll see you tomorrow with another regular installment of the No Silicast podcast. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.